This show furnished by NeuroHealth LLC.
You're listening to The Dr. D Show about neuropsychology and well-being.
Get the knowledge you must have to live a powerful, positive life.
The Dr. D Show. Here for you.
Welcome, listeners, to The Dr. D Show today. It is wonderful to have you with us. I am Dr. D, a clinical and forensic neuropsychologist, and my show is about educating you about issues of brain-related matters, neuropsychology, and psychology in general. Today, we'll touch on a topic that is, I see it as a hot and controversial topic, not just for scientists and psychologists, but also for the public in general. We see historically waves of development, interaction, and clashes that have to do with race, culture, and color. And today what I want to do is touch on those topics from the perspective of what a neuropsychologist and a psychologist would look at. So first and foremost, our general disclaimer, this show is psychoeducational. It's not meant to replace professional mental health advice. So if you do believe that you suffer from a particular disorder, please do reach out to professional help. With that in mind, the show sometimes is not appropriate for young people, so your discretion is advised. With that in mind, I want to wish also everyone a happy, blessed, and safe Halloween. While you're out there having fun getting creative, be also safe on the roads. Us neuropsychologists do not want to see more head injuries. Now, what I want to talk about, how does race, culture, color, how do those concepts touch neuropsychological evaluations, and what does it look like on the couch? So, first of all, there's a lot of disagreement about how different cultures or individuals that come from different backgrounds and cultures get represented in the medical world and medical diagnosis. Some things that we know could be quite troubling. For example, and I'll just give you some quick examples, individuals who come from African-American background are more likely, for example, to be diagnosed with psychosis, while individuals who come from a Caucasian background are more likely to be diagnosed with other types of disorders, such as depression or bipolar. Also, there's differences in how individuals who come from educated background versus non-educated background get represented in psych assessment. Here is a scenario. Let me give you, and these are really real cases for neuropsychologists every day. Every month, I get a case of an individual who either is educationally disadvantaged or doesn't speak English very well, comes from another culture, maybe moved to the U.S. at a particular age, advanced age. So here I am coming to assess their brain and how they're functioning. Well, what do I do? Do I assess them in English? If, let's say, they come from the Philippines, do I assess them in Tagalog? Who do I question? Do I question the spouse? Do I question the children? And even if I do, are they going to tell me the truth? So these are very real and serious questions. And here I am supposed to find out whether there's brain damage or not. Now, let me go ahead and make it even more complicated. So we've got that scenario, and let's add to that that the person is claiming that they have a brain injury from, let's say, a car accident, and they're suing the big truck company. Well, now you've got somebody who it's going to be a problem assessing them in English, comes from a different culture, claiming that they have a brain injury. And you don't know if they're lying or not. Just because somebody comes from another culture doesn't make them a saint and doesn't make them a liar. So you don't know, right? You don't know. They're a human being at the end of the day. And here they are claiming that they have brain damage. And the battle sometimes between the experts goes all the way to court. So whatever the neuropsychologist says in that case is going to be questioned by experts, by other experts in the court, by the judge, by the jury. what did you do? How did you assess that? How did you assess the brain damage, if there is any? How did you find out whether the person was lying or not? You know, those are very real questions, and they get very complicated in very real cases when we're dealing with other cultures. Now, in some locations in the United States, being a person that comes from another culture might not be something very common. But in Los Angeles, it's very common. Almost every single one of us comes from a different background, and maybe we could be the first or the second or at best the third generation coming from a different culture. And so in essence, we are multicultural. We are full of the colors of the previous generations, get enmeshed with the color or development of our own parents, and then ourselves within our environment in today's age. So you could really see that a person is full of various kinds of aspects, and that person might take onto themselves maybe 20% of what their parents wore, and then they're 80% their own. Maybe they hold on to the previous culture more tightly. Maybe they're 80% of that culture and about 20% of today's American culture. So while we realize that individuals are complex this way, we also realize that every person is their own. Every person chooses what kind of values and perspectives they choose to take into their life and which ones they choose to reject. And let's make it more complicated, because it does get more complicated. Now you've got somebody, let's say that, and this is very real, by the way. So I have a friend who is coming from a Hispanic background. She married an Irish man, and then together they decided to convert to Judaism. Ah! So you're saying, but this is real. This is real things. These are real things. So here you've got individuals that although they come from one culture or another culture, they decide which components they still keep and then what other types of cultures they maybe decide to incorporate into their own lives. And then they create their own identity, their own home, their own lifestyle, and what works for them. And so a good psychologist, a good neuropsychologist, will be able to see that, will be able to recognize that complexity. There is an old Kabbalistic statement that says a person is a whole world. And when you build a person, you build a world. When you destroy a person, you destroy a world. What does that mean? It's a world of the people that came before them. It's the world of what they are, and it's the world of the children that they will produce for generations to come. And so the impact that we have on each individual really touches on all of those generational differences. Now, going back, so we talked a little bit about generations. We talk about some cultural background that individuals come in with. I'll say that my perspective, I'm very cultural in a sense that my father is Italian, my mother's Yemen. They met in Israel, they got married there. I moved to the United States and married an American man who comes from a European background. So, to me, I see culture as something that potentially can enhance your life, can actually make it richer. Okay, you can understand more people when you are exposed to more cultures. You can be more open-minded about different things that people do and different ways of practicing things. That doesn't mean that you compromise your own values and cultures. I am an Orthodox Jewish woman who is married to a rabbi, so we have a lot of culture and religion as well. Yet, with that in mind, I could see how another person would practice things differently, would have another way of doing things. And that's very important that a professional, a medical professional, a psychologist, a neuropsychologist will put the openness and perspective of knowledge and awareness first in front of them before they put themselves. Can our background help us in assess other people? Sure. But our own identity does not come into play first. What it is the person in front of us, where they're coming from, and how we are going to help that person do no harm and work towards the well-being of the person. With that, stay with us and go ahead and call the show if you have any questions, any stories. Maybe you had an experience with a psychologist or with a doctor that you felt maybe your culture, your identity, your gender, your background was not taken into place. Call us at 800-222-5222, 800-222-5222. This is Dr. D. Gaines at Talk Radio 790 AM.
Honey, what is that in your CPAP mask?
Oh, that's just my mold collection.
Ew, gross! And what is that?
What, that bacteria colony right there?
Yeah, cool, huh?
Okay, CPAP users, admit it. You're not always as careful about cleaning your system as you should be. Unfortunately, a dirty mask and hose can make you sick. Respiratory infections, allergy attacks, and more. But now there's an easy way to protect yourself. SoClean.com has released the world's first and only automated CPAP cleaner and sanitizer. It kills 99.9% of CPAP germs in minutes. For a limited time, you can try it risk-free for 30 days. Just call 1-800-700-1821. SoClean is hands-free. Just pop in your mask, close the lid, and presto, your CPAP comes out clean and fresh in minutes. Don't let germs wreak havoc on your health. Call in the next 10 minutes for your risk-free trial. 1-800-700-1821. That's 1-800-700-1821.
Message and data rates may apply.
If you're considering going back to school, ask yourself the following questions. Do you need the flexibility to take classes on your schedule? Do you have college credits you need transferred? Do you want to earn a quality degree from a world-renowned university? If you answered yes to any of these, Arizona State University is the perfect school for you. Arizona State University offers over 100 of its highly ranked degree programs 100% online. You'll earn the same degree as on campus from wherever you are. Learn more by texting CLASS to 369-369.
My name is Jonathan. I live in Portland, Oregon, and my major is communications.
ASU has helped me with my life goals in the fact that it's giving me a platform to stand upon and provided me a firm foundation. The degree program fit wonderfully with how and what I wanted to do with my life.
Find out for yourself why the Wall Street Journal ranks ASU fifth in the nation for producing the best qualified graduates. Get started today. Text CLASS to 369-369. Again, that's CLASS to 369-369.
The thought of my sons growing up without me inspired me to quit smoking.
I talked to my doctors, and then I threw away all my cigarettes, ashtrays, and lighters.
I started exercising instead of smoking.
Getting support from friends online kept me on track.
Staying away from alcohol when I was first quitting was key.
Instead of smoking after I ate, I'd get up and take a walk.
I missed having a cigarette in my hand, so I'd hold a pen or a straw, anything.
Until I knew I wouldn't give in to temptation, I spent more time with my friends who didn't smoke.
I went to places that were smoke-free.
I didn't stay quit the very first time I tried.
I kept on trying, and I learned something each time.
Do whatever it takes.
No matter how many times it takes.
I quit.
I quit.
I quit.
We did it, so can you.
You can quit. For free help, call 1-800-QUIT-NOW. A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and CDC.
Talk Radio 790
KABC.
Welcome back to the Dr. D Show. This is Dr. D Gaines, clinical neuropsychologist. Welcome to the show. We are talking today about culture, race, color, and in between when it comes to the psychology couch. We have a caller with us. Michelle, welcome to the show. Michelle?
Yes, can you hear me?
Hi, Michelle. Welcome to the show. This is Dr. D. How can I help you?
Hi, I heard you talking about culture, and I know I'm Asian American, and growing up, my parents were brought up here as well. But now that they're older, I feel like we're having issues, or just I never realized that it was the cultural difference because they were brought up in another country, but then they instilled everything American to us, so they're a little confused. So I was just wondering if you had any help, advice to deal with those issues?
Michelle, I'm so glad that you bring this issue. First of all, the Asian American population is growing, continuing to grow, and so we, even in the area of psychology, continue have to improve our services and increase our understanding for the Asian American population to be effective when we treat. Now, what you indicated was basically a twofold scenario. You were talking about coming from the Asian background, but also two different generations. You're talking about your parents' generation that seems to be more of the traditional role in the household, while growing up as an American child, really, for you in an American environment. So could you give us an example of what would be something that you see is different in the way that you would see things versus your parents?
I think more passive-aggressive behavior of telling me something, but then, you know, kind of saying it like, well, you shouldn't do it that way. But in America, they want people to be more open, creative, but as an Asian, they want you to be more studious.
See, that's very interesting that you're bringing this, because we do see sort of the scenario that you're describing is what we call difference between societies that are focused on the self and the development of the person, which is an American view or a Western culture view, I should say, versus other cultures, more like the Asian culture, where it focuses on the community. It focuses on how the person contributes to the community. The values of the family and the community come before the identity of the person as an ego-based person. And so that would be one very big difference. In a Western culture, we encourage children to be independent, to accomplish for themselves, to develop their own identity, where in other cultures, what's really valued and appreciated is how do you contribute to the community? How are you as a part of the family, a part of the community, and how do you put away actually your own wheels and interests in order to serve well the community? Does that sound like something that seems similar to what you're experiencing?
And that's probably why there's always confusion. Like, I'm like, aren't you telling me to be my own person, but not really?
Right. Where is the balance between being my own person to actually, you know, achieving something that the family would like you to achieve? But you also mentioned a really interesting point. You said something about passive aggressive. Well, what are they trying to say? And that's something that psychologists see on our end often when we have more traditional-based Asian-American family, but not just. There's other cultures that seem to be similar. When they come into therapy, for example, because it tends to be Asian culture, Middle Eastern culture, tend to be more male-dominated society, many times we will have actually the females maybe not expressing as directly what their issues are, how they feel, how they think, what the problems are, but sort of expressing those indirectly, and sometimes, believe it or not, through physical ailments, complaints of pain, complaints of feeling discomfort, feeling sick, having headaches. It would be sort of, there is something that I'm suffering, I'm going through, but I don't want to describe it directly.
Wow.
And you know, one thing that's also interesting that sometimes we see is that there has to be a way to earn the respect of whoever is leading the family. So if it's a male-dominated society, the psychologist many times needs to first earn the respect. And I often say, actually, the respect of both the male and the female in the room. You need to earn their trust. I'll have to say that I assess a good number of individuals who, coming from Hispanic background, naturally we're in Los Angeles. If you don't earn their respect, if they don't believe that they can trust you, and that you respect them and how they think and where they're coming from, they're going to hold back information. They're not going to tell you what's going on. They're going to say everything is fine. And here you are becoming an ineffective psychologist because you're not really getting to the bottom of problems. So getting the trust of the person in the room is very important, especially when they come from a different culture. So, Michelle, thank you so much for bringing this to our attention. Was that helpful in any way?
Yes, just knowing that it's an issue, and I've tried talking to my parents and telling them, you know, I'm what you want me to be, but of course it's still a little, they're still a little ashamed of, you know, they want more of me, so.
So that's the thing. So one thing that I would do for you, and I would think about how to do that, is really, first of all, bring your parents to the awareness that you may have different ways of communication. There is a Western way of communicating information and there's more traditional one, and still keep a lot of respect to the tradition that is in the room, because that's the way that they were raised. That's the way that they see the world and understand things. But they're also capable of seeing you as somebody who's growing up in a different environment. So I think when there's mutual respect and increased communication, you can actually achieve a lot.
Oh, that does. Thank you.
You're welcome. Michelle, thank you so much for calling into the show and sharing with us your experience. I wish you much success with the parents.
Thank you, Dr. D.
You're welcome. Bye, honey. All right. Well, it looks like also that we have another caller, but this was a great example of a cultural scenario that actually really described what I was just talking about. Now, we have another caller with us. Vicky, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Hi, Vicky. How can I help you?
Okay. My question is, I have a CAT scan with showing a stroke. I have an EEG that shows a stroke, but an MRI that didn't show the stroke. Is that odd?
It's actually not odd. Scans tend to show different things. So different types of imaging techniques actually can show different aspects of the brain and can show damage in different ways or not show it. So MRI tends to look at structural changes in the brain, and so it might not actually capture what was seen at the CAT scan or the EEG. One thing that you would want to know then is, let's say that there was a stroke in the brain in a particular area, you would want to think, well, did or did it not affect the way that I'm functioning? Do I think that there is anything that stays, that's lingering in the way that I'm actually functioning? So you want to ask yourself whether there's an impairment.
On the left side.
That follows through. So if there is an impairment to the left side, was your team sending you to a neuropsychologist?
Yes, you.
And one thing that you would want to know, so if, for example, you are a patient of someone, one thing you don't want to do is go ahead and discuss your medical condition on air. So in that in mind, we would not want to go into further details with that. Now, we're going to go ahead and take a break, and we'll come right back to be with you.
Hi, this is Chip Wade, DIY expert, TV host, and lead designer for Wade Works Creative. It's autumn, and we've gone from being too warm to trying to stay warm. This fall, the Home Depot's guaranteed low prices have made insulating your house more affordable than ever. Insulate now and save up to 20% on cooling costs by sealing and increasing the insulation in your home. Head to the Home Depot today for the materials you need for your new insulation project. Visit homedepot.com/insulation for more details. The Home Depot, more saving, more doing.
Winter's coming quick. Here's a project that's even quicker. Fill your attic with Attic-Cat fiberglass insulation. Now at the Home Depot, buy 10 or more bags of Owens Corning Attic-Cat insulation and get the blow-in insulation machine rental free. It's an easy way to save money on energy bills and stay cozy all season long. Get on top of dropping temperatures with a free Attic-Cat machine rental with 10 bags or more of Owens Corning insulation. Only at the Home Depot. More saving, more doing. Winter's coming quick. Here's a project that's even quicker. Fill your attic with Attic-Cat fiberglass insulation. Now at the Home Depot, buy 10 or more bags of Owens Corning Attic-Cat insulation and get the blow-in insulation machine rental free. It's an easy way to save money on energy bills and stay cozy all season long. Get on top of dropping temperatures with a free Attic-Cat machine rental with 10 bags or more of Owens Corning insulation. Only at the Home Depot. More saving, more doing.
Individuals and businesses with tax problems, listen carefully. If you owe over $10,000 in back taxes or have unfiled tax returns, U.S. Tax Shield can help you take back control. The IRS can seize your bank accounts, garnish your paycheck, close your business, and file criminal charges. Our team of tax attorneys can stop collections and get you protected. U.S. Tax Shield offers a price protection guaranteed quote to get you protected today. U.S. Tax Shield is A-plus rated with the BBB, so call 800-466-9625. U.S. Tax Shield, 800-466-9625.
I'm good, but I have a story, and I don't know where to start.
I'm good, but I feel alone in a crowd.
I'm good, but the past keeps coming back.
When the service member or veteran in your life says,
I'm good.
Are you really listening?
I'm good, but I can't get out of bed.
I'm good, but I can't sleep.
I'm good, but I feel overwhelmed.
I'm good, but I don't feel safe.
I'm good, but I still have nightmares.
I'm good, but I don't need any help.
I'm good, but I don't feel anything anymore.
I'm good, but I can't live like this anymore.
I'm really not so good. But are you ready to listen?
Suicide prevention is everyone's responsibility. Listen to the veteran or service member in your life. If you are in crisis or know someone who is, call the Veterans Crisis Line and Military Crisis Line at 1-800-273-8255 and press 1 for free 24/7 confidential support.
My name is Dale Pazinski. I'm 19 years old, and this is how I live United. I've always been kind of a computer geek, and I found a way to use those skills to help the homeless in my community. For people facing hard times, computer skills and a basic resume are so important. It may seem like a small thing, but it makes a huge difference in people's lives. So with United Way, I created a program where I work with the homeless. Together, we go through their whole job history, write a resume, and then save it on their very own USB drive. We provide workbooks and training certificates. I even budgeted for cupcakes so we can celebrate as a class when one of our people gets a job. That's huge. When somebody says, hey man, that job that you helped me apply for, I got it. That's what living United feels like to me. My name is Dale Pazinski. I help people achieve financial independence. So I don't just wear the shirt, I live it.
Give, advocate, volunteer, live United. Go to liveunited.org, brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
Home of the smartest listeners in Southern California. Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Welcome back to the Dr. D Show. It is wonderful to have you with us. I'm a clinical neuropsychologist, and this show is psychoeducational about the brain, science, psychology, and today we're talking about possible bias or considerations in terms of race, culture, and color. So the next point that I wanted to talk about is even as simple as differences between males and females. Interestingly enough, research was predominantly done with mostly with male participants over history of science and research for quite a long time. And in fact, up until 1993, where the Women's Health Equity Act was passed, women's issues in medicine and psychology were not as well addressed or studied. Up until right after, actually, that act, women's issues such as infertility, breast cancer, ovarian cancer, etc., were recognized as issues that need to be studied well. So, and this is pretty recent developments, and it's something to think about because gender can make a big difference in the way that we communicate. I've addressed before on the show and always do that there are gender differences in the brain and in the way that men and women communicate. It's one of the reasons why there is lots of couples therapy going on. Also, women and men go through different hormonal changes, different stages in life, which is going to make a difference in the type of medical conditions that they have and in the way that they get diagnosis. When we even think about children, boys and girls can manifest symptoms of the same disorder differently. And it's something that I'm going to talk about in a disorder that's called borderline personality disorder. But before I say that, I want to remind you that you are welcome to call the show with your own stories, with your own issues that have to do with race, culture, psychology, or the brain. And you can call us at 800-222-5222, 800-222-5222. Do you have a story? Do you have a question? Do you have something that's bugging your mind about how how culture interacts in the way that we understand people? So with that in mind, talking about disorders, there are 10 primary personality disorders that the DSM, the American Psychiatric Association Manual for Disorders, describe. But interestingly enough, about six of them, it's suggested, are overly diagnosed with males, or more commonly diagnosed with males, while about three other ones are more diagnosed with for women. So males tend to be diagnosed more with antisocial personality disorder, narcissistic, obsessive-compulsive, paranoid, schizotypal, and schizoid, while women are more likely to be diagnosed with borderline, histrionic, and dependent. And one might ask themselves why. And it's a very different question, very difficult question to answer. Is it just because we have a gender bias? Is it that male doctors or female doctors that see a patient comes through the room might see males more as narcissistic or antisocial, while seeing women more as emotional, therefore they get histrionic and they get dependent and borderline? Those three that I just mentioned are more, tend to be emotionally more vocal. Or is it that it's really not the fault of the doctors necessarily and their biases, but maybe those types of personality disorders are more genetically linked to males versus females? Okay, so we know that there could be a strong factor of genetics in medicine and science, although not as strong in personality disorders, but that doesn't mean that it's not there. Just because we haven't discovered it doesn't mean it's not there. Or perhaps maybe it's a combination. Maybe it's something that runs in families, and then we see a continuation of that, and it's expressed more strongly with one gender versus the other. So those questions are very difficult to answer, and science really doesn't have, and research in psychology actually has many times opposing views when it comes, or contradicting views when it comes to looking at so many factors and facets of gender bias and cultural bias and racial bias. And it still remains to be seen, do we understand better how some disorders are manifested more with certain types of either genders or cultures versus not? And I kind of mentioned the borderline personality disorder. This is one that actually experts in psychology do feel, many of them do feel, that borderline is somewhat overly diagnosed with the female population, and perhaps many times misdiagnosed with the male population. And there are descriptions on how some of the symptoms are different for a borderline male versus a borderline female. Perhaps it's the fact that men tend to have more testosterone. Perhaps it's the fact that boys tend to act out more when they're frustrated or when they're under psychological distress, that they end up getting involved with behavioral problems, what we would call it eventually conduct problems in school, which gets them into the likelihood of getting involved with the law, which sometimes then puts them on the track of being diagnosed as antisocial. And girls their acting out might look more like something emotional, a cry for help, and they are more likely maybe to receive a borderline personality disorder because of that. But girls can be just as likely as boys to suffer or actually have an antisocial personality disorder. And we have to understand that there's hallmarks to that. Antisocial personality disorder, one of the symptoms is disrespect to rules, to the law, disregard to common law, to authority, getting involved with, there's some level of narcissism, getting involved with conduct-like behavior, with crime, more likely to involved with substances. There's all sorts of types of aspects of an antisocial person, superficially charming, etc. But yet again, we're seeing more males being diagnosed with that than females. Now, borderlines are described as individuals who have difficulty maintaining social and interpersonal relationships, individuals who have a hard time managing their emotions, running hot and cold with the same person multiple times, have difficulty organizing themselves, organizing information and following through with tasks. This also is an aspect of executive dysfunction, which we find many times with individuals with borderline personality disorder. But yet again, you see more girls get diagnosed with that because we see a lot of emotional connotation. Okay, we see a lot of emotional involvement, dynamics, and difficulties, maybe because girls tend to express their emotions more and be more verbal than boys. Maybe that's the reason that they're more likely to be diagnosed with bipolar. Now, that's just a hypothesis, but this is something that many of us experts have entertained. So it's something to think about, that when the responsibility of the psychologist, the neuropsychologist, is to see beyond the gender, and is to see beyond the culture. It's to integrate it, but really also to see beyond it. At the end of the day, we need to question ourselves and be our devil's advocate and say, well, my gut feeling in the first moment, and by the way, that's called type one diagnosis, which I go with my gut. The person walks into the room after seeing so many patients for a long time, the first 5 minutes I say, ah, borderline. That's our first tendency, the intuitive feeling of the doctor. But we have to challenge that type one perspective and be our devil's advocate and say, wait a second, I know it feels, it so much feels like a borderline, but what if it's not? What if it's something else? And that would be the type two process, where we would go for logic. Do I really have all the symptoms in front of me that required for that diagnosis? Did I rule out every other possible thing? Why am I saying that that's so important? Why is it so crucial? Because you can ask yourself, well, what's the big deal? It's actually a very big deal. I remember that I was still a student, okay, under training, and I was requested to interview and discover what type of diagnosis this woman in her 40s had. Now, I was working in an environment where women were going through abuse and they were in a shelter, and this woman walks into the room. She is morbidly obese, a very large lady. She suffers from depression that is so severe that she goes to it once a month. She goes into a severe depression to the point she's suicidal, cannot take care of her kids, goes into a crisis mode. And then she gradually gets out of it and stabilizes. And then she does it all over again every month. Now, this is a single mom to three kids in a shelter. You can only imagine how stressful and difficult this was for her kids, how it was for her to maintain her care, and for her mental health treatment team. So she was diagnosed with depression, and she was receiving different kinds of medications to be treated. Now, here I am sitting in front of her and was told by my supervisor, this is a very difficult case. She keeps cycling. We're trying to figure out what she has. She's sitting in front of me, and I can't help but noticing that she has a lot of facial hair. She, in fact, was quite hairy on her arms and like I said, very overweight. And when I look at that, I think, well, that's an interesting presentation. So I figure, what if I looked into that? So I put the lists together and I actually Googled, which even doctors do sometimes when they don't know something. But we don't want you to Google to get diagnosis, by the way. There's a lot more that the doctors know than Google. So I Google facial hair, morbidly obese, severely depressed, cycling. Bam! What shows up? Testosterone irregularity for women. When a woman has, which is a rare condition, irregularities with her testosterone, it could be so severe that you will have those symptoms. Lots of facial hair, morbidly obese, cycling with severe depression. So I think, huh. So I go to my supervisor and I say, did this woman go through an endocrinological testing? Was she going through a hormone checkup? And we look back at the chart. Nope, lady didn't go through that. So we send her into the endocrinologist. Lo and behold, it was the correct diagnosis. The lady was suffering from an extreme imbalance in testosterone production in her body, which resulted the poor woman to cycle severely every month. When we put her under hormone therapy and got her back to be balanced in that level, major changes occurred. She was not cycling with severe depression. She was losing weight. And also she gradually started losing the facial hair, which was nice. But she also felt better about herself. You know, it's a ripple effect. You change one thing, you get the person to be balanced, to be managed, and so many other things fall into place. Here there was a condition that was physiologically causing a psychological condition. And we were first only treating the psychological condition, failing to identify the medical condition that was causing it. So the moral of the story, very important to keep for the doctor to keep their mind open, to look into other areas. Have I ruled out possible medical conditions that are causing the psychological distress? It's not that just the person has a mental health disorder, they've got something else going on. So you got to get to the root of things. And this is why I always say diagnosis matters. With that in mind, we're going to go to a break, but I would love to hear from you, your story, your experiences. Call us at 800-222-5222. Call us at 800-222-5222. And stay with us after these announcements.
They can be some of the most interesting people. Lawyers, politicians, judges, and authors. And every Saturday morning at 11 and Sunday night at 10 here on Champions of Justice, Tom Girardi talks with them about legal issues that affect your life and satisfy your curiosity. Tom asks the questions and you get to hear the surprising answers. It's a legal show that's interesting. Champions of Justice, Saturday morning at 11 and Sunday night at 10 here on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Staying healthy is difficult. You've got health questions, I've got health answers. I'm Dr. Bob Martz, and tune into my show Sunday morning at 10, right after The Motorman. Sponsored by Dr. O'Hara's Probiotics and Chia Omega at finer health food stores.
Hey, you like free stuff, right?
Yeah.
Well, KABC is on a mission to hook you up with tickets to the hottest concerts, comedy shows, movie premieres, theme parks, restaurants, gift cards, cash books, DVDs, hats, t-shirts, cash money, Well, pretty much anything that we can get our hands on.
Gimme.
But
Before, hang on a second, before
you can get your hands on these cool prizes, there are a couple of rules.
KABC on-air contests are open to legal U.S. residents age 18 or older at the time of entry who reside in Los Angeles, Orange, San Bernardino, Riverside, or Ventura counties.
Employees of Cumulus Media Holdings Incorporated, its parent company, affiliates, related entities, and subsidiaries, other radio stations serving the listening area, and immediate family members and household members of all such employees are not eligible to participate.
Listeners may only win once every 30 days. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited. Limit one entry per person unless otherwise stated.
A complete copy of the rules can be obtained by visiting kabc.com/contest-rules.
You're going to need me.
You're going to need us.
All of us.
You're going to need our technical skills.
Our math. Our engineering skills.
You're going to need our help with your water. Your air. Your food.
You're going to need our organizational skills. Our problem-solving skills.
You're going to need our determination, our honesty, our compassion.
You're going to need the next generation of leaders to face the challenges the future will bring.
And we promise, we'll be there when you need us.
Today, 4-H is growing the next generation of leaders. Support us at 4-H.org.
We got a real good show for you.
Coming up on The Next Drive Home with Jillian Barbary and John Phillips, will Trump TV be on your television screen soon? Live and local right after Dr. Drew and Mike Hathaway right here on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Welcome back to The Doctor Show. The D Show, it's wonderful to have you with us. By the way, I want to share with you that on my KABC page, I put a questionnaire for you, the Healthy Brain Questionnaire, that will invite you to ask your questions more directly to me at a new special event that we're creating a couple of months from now. You also will be getting information of research, my own e-newsletter that's coming out, and other fun things. So go ahead and if you want to join us, that would be wonderful. Go into my KABC page to the Healthy Brain Questionnaire, very short and fun one, and fill it out. We would love to hear from you. With that in mind, today's show is about race, culture, color, and issues in between in the psychology and neuropsychology practice. The phone number here, 800-222-5222. If you have a story of your own, questions, concerns, things that bother you about this topic, I would love to hear from you. With that in mind, I want to talk about the some other common issues that we see, and I want you to think about that. So, you know, when children get assessed, often one of the most common ways that they get assessed to see if they're capable to understand information and do well in school is something that we call IQ testing, right? What is their intelligence and how they're doing well with their intelligence? And can they understand information very well? And would that help them in school? Here's one of the issues that we see when we use the intelligence measures that we have. One of the most robust and popular instruments that we use to test intelligence is really based on the frame mind and thinking of individuals who come from the Western culture, and even more specifically, educated individuals and that come from the Western culture. I must say that education, college education, changes the way that the individual communicates, sees the world, and what type of words and language tools they use to express themselves. And so creating instruments that are based on that type of way of communication really limits in some ways and hinders the ability of the instrument to measure the intelligence of an individual that did not grow up getting this type of education. It's very important to understand because in other cultures, a person might never even learn how to read, okay, or write. How do you test the intelligence of that person? What measures do you use? How do you determine the IQ of that person? But let's not go that far even to other cultures. Let's look here at home. What about children? And unfortunately, there are many children who grow up, too many children, who grow up in an environment where they don't receive proper education. They're not exposed to great school system. Maybe they're struggling with one thing or another. They don't have good learning skills. They don't have a home that supports their learning environment. And they consequently don't do well in school. So they don't retain very important information at the beginning years of their life. And they continuously get graduated from one year to another, moving on in school without really gaining the skills that they need to gain. How do we know what is the potential of that person? When I was doing assessments for children who come from a very disadvantaged background, poor environments, that question showed up again and again. How do I know what is the potential of this child in front of me? If they didn't get the skills on how to study and learn properly, if they didn't get enough vocabulary, if they didn't learn what information to share with a person. Educated people teach their children to communicate information in tidbits that quantifies into something meaningful. It's a detail-based communication. While in other environments, a person might be communicating more emotional content, more experiential content, and research has been done in this area. So how do I quantify that potential? How do I quantify that IQ? I have a very hard time doing so. Not just me, but other people that assess children who come from that background. In addition, We're not even talking about creativity. We're not talking about other types of intelligence. We're not talking about the fact that somebody might not be very verbal, very mainstream knowledge exposed, like math and reading, but they might be extremely talented in music and dance and all types of arts. Why aren't we measuring that as an IQ? Now, there are some tests out there that tap into these skills, and a good neuropsychologist will do that. They will think outside of the box and say, you know, maybe that person is not so much into reading, but they're very creative in putting things together. They're might able to build things. When I assess someone that comes in, often individuals don't come in because they're so bright and doing so great, right? They mostly come in because there's an issue. A good neuropsychologist will look not just at the minuses, the negatives, the difficulties, but they'll look at the good things, at the creative things, at the potential, okay? At the areas that the person can excel. Because the ultimate job that we have is not just to find out what's wrong, but to find out what's right and how we can take that right and continue on with that. Because we need individuals who could do all kinds of things. We don't need everyone to get a PhD. We need people who can dance and sing and create and build and construct and all kinds of things. So we need to keep our minds very open and at the end of the day, make sure that the assessment counts. With that in mind, it sounds like we have a caller. Do we have a caller online? Okay, so we're going to have a caller that's coming in just about a minute with a question. Hello, Nancy. Welcome to the show.
Hello, doctor. I'm sorry I tuned in a little late, so forgive me if I'm asking a question that has already been asked and answered. But is it important if someone is seeking therapy to have a therapist that is of the same race, culture, and sex as the person receiving the therapy?
That's a great question, Nancy. Thank you so much for bringing that on air. It's a great question. Okay, so you could right away think about opposing views, right? You could think about, well, if a person comes from a very strong culture and there's a lot of culture in their life, it would be so much more efficient to have somebody who comes from their culture to work with them. And many times we would search for somebody who comes from that culture because they'll be able to understand nuances and social norms and rules that we might not be aware of that exist in that culture, and by that becoming more effective. However, not always. Sometimes coming from the same culture can actually hinder the ability of the therapist to see other things outside of the culture. Because at the end of the day, we are all human, and human issues continue to repeat themselves. Autism comes in all colors. Marital issues come in all shapes and colors, and gender, and types of relationships, right? You know, so at the end of the day, we're all human, and those issues of humanity repeat themselves. The most important thing is not that the therapist will have to be from the same gender or race as you. The most important thing is that the therapist gets what the problem is, understands how cultural and whether culture does even affect the context of the problem. Does it have a room in that situation? And if the culture has an impact, by the way, sometimes the culture doesn't have an impact. You know, sometimes you got a Hispanic caller sitting in front of you and saying, there's nothing to do with culture. It has to do with whatever that is. You know, just because somebody comes from a particular culture, that doesn't mean they want you to hone in on their culture. Okay? You know, somebody is coming from the Middle East doesn't want you to talk the whole session about the fact that they're from the Middle East. You know, sometimes the problem is just the problem. So a good clinician will assess what is the capacity of the culture there in the room? What does it mean? Are there any cultural issues? Does it have an impact? Can I utilize knowledge that comes with for that culture in the treatment of that person? And then finally, what do I have in the room to deal with? I know excellent clinicians and therapists that work with all kinds of cultures and are very effective. I have in reality, especially by the way, in neuropsychology, just this past month, I assessed two Filipino individuals, two individuals who come from a Middle Eastern background, etc. And at the end of the day, while it's very important and it's our job as clinicians to understand a lot about that culture, we also need to understand and efficiently treat what is in the room. Does that make sense, Nancy?
Yes, thank you. And I think especially since we're in America, we're supposed to be a melting pot, that there are a lot of common values that we aspire to.
Absolutely. And it is important to look more at commonalities than differences. And don't we wish, even in today's political climate, whichever side the person is at, to focus on the commonalities and what makes us united, what makes us work together and not separated, because we cannot function well when we work separately. Nancy, thank you so much for your question. I hope this was helpful. And with that in mind, we are going to go into a break. Call us 800-222-5222 when we're coming back.
This show furnished by NeuroHealth LLC.